This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. The right to a fair trial. You know all about that, right? Who would want one, hey? In the wheeling, dealing world of federal pleas and bargaining for sentences, a trial by jury seems to be something of an afterthought or a luxury item few can afford. Or worst of all, it's a high-risk, loser-lose-all proposition. Last year, guilty pleas resolved more than 97% of federal cases prosecuted to conclusion by the Justice Department. Now, that may not be strictly speaking news, but that number just astounded me. The rate is way up, along with the number of federal criminal defendants in the past decade. The number's doubled. Joining us now is David Feige. He's the author of Indefensible, One Lawyer's Journey into the Inferno of American Justice. It's a spectacular book. It's led to various other projects on defense and justice in the United States. He's also a former trial chief of the Bronx Defenders. David, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks, John.
So as someone who sees it from the defense team side, what is this 97% of federal cases prosecuted to conclusion never make it to trial figure mean?
Heartbreak. Over and over. What it really means is that the entire criminal justice system is very, very different from what people imagine, because it is a system of pleas, not trials. It's a system in which the government stacks the deck so much in their own favor that criminal defendants, by the way, including innocent ones, some who have been exonerated subsequently, feel like there's no choice and no way out but to plead guilty.
That to lose in a trial is so staggeringly awful that you might as well take a plea. And the Wall Street Journal, in their story about this, tells the story in the opening of an individual who only decided to plead not guilty because he was worried that an angel would be mad that he was lying because he knew he was not guilty.
Exactly. And look, there are a bunch of things that go into this calculus, but one of them is, of course, overcharging. The government is capable of piling on charges and making it such that the sentence that they offer you seems infinitesimal in comparison to the sentence you're going to get after trial. And so you have these heartbreaking conversations with clients in which you say, basically, look, the end of the road is 6 months, a year, 2 years away, but if we blow this thing, you're going to be in here for 20 or 30.
Is there any sort of case law on what happens in this plea process? Is it a complete gray area? Because a trial is supposed to be a finding of fact.
Right.
But what you're describing is a sort of casino-style bargaining session.
You give that up. You give up the right to a trial when you plea. You agree to certain facts. And, you know, justice then takes its course. I use finger quotes here that you can't see.
But are there – and we can hear it in your voice. That's for sure. But do the courts have any sort of jurisdiction over the behavior of prosecutors in how they what charges they bring, the question of overcharging, the question of approaching a defendant in a way that's designed explicitly to induce the kind of fear you're talking about so that the lawyer says, hey, you might as well plead guilty?
Yes and no. Let's draw a distinction. Judges ultimately validate pleas, but let's bear in mind that in an overcrowded system, it is generally in the judge's interest, particularly, by the way, in state systems, which are wildly overtaxed, to just rubber stamp pleas. There have been, in fact, examples in the federal system where judges say, you know what, these conditions are so onerous, I'm not going to accept this plea. In fact, the journal article mentioned one of them in which waiving the right to appeal was found to be too onerous. Now, frankly, in comparison to some of the collateral consequences of a criminal conviction, including immigration, deportation, loss of public benefits.
Can't vote.
You can't vote. You get thrown out of public housing out in the West. Since we're talking about the federal system, you can't carry a gun. You can't go hunting. You know, there's an enormous number of collateral consequences. Compared to many of those, I personally think waiving the right to appeal is not so huge, but it is a place, at least in one instance, where the judge stepped in and said no mas.
So how does this work when a defendant comes to you thinking that this is all about – and again, I sound naive here, but I think it's worth reminding people of the way the system works. A defendant comes to you saying, look, here's the deal. I know I'm not guilty. And they're looking at the system as this kind of finding of fact tribunal. And in fact, you have to explain to them that, no, we're making a deal here.
That's right. And what you have to explain to them, and again, it's a
and you've
terrible
conversation. You've done
over
this.
And over and over, over the course of 15 years, John. And by the way, we haven't even addressed the question of the coercive nature of incarceration, in which the really heartbreaking conversations are, plead guilty, they'll let you out tomorrow. Say no, go to trial, you'll be sitting here for a year waiting for your day in court. Those are really the ones that break your heart. Because
has a court ever ruled on that statement being even something that should come out of the government's mouth?
You know, the truth of the matter is what they do is just blind themselves. They say, well, you know, it's not our fault. It's not our fault he can't afford bail. Oh, well. No. In fact, it seems to me that every instance in which the government offers a time-served type plea, the court should say, well, I'm not going to coerce him anymore. Go, let him out. But they don't do it. In fact, every single day in every single jurisdiction I have ever seen, there are public defenders right now in the Bronx sitting across from clients having that conversation.
All right, counselor. So what would a prosecutor say about this? I mean, you're Mr. The defendant is always right, lefty, public radio dude, you know, come on. What would the prosecutor say? No, the system is working. The pleas are a constructive element that help move the system
forward.
Well,
the prosecutors would say, and I'm really the wrong person to ask for their perspective because I find it so odious. I think the prosecutors would say, well, we're making deals. We're making it good for them. But that argument ignores overcharging. It ignores what we jokingly call the trial tax, in which judges hammer defendants for exercising their right to go to trial by giving them more time than they would have gotten on the plea. And in the federal system, by the way, it ignores one of the most coercive and shocking elements that I just want to address, which is you can be sentenced for acquitted conduct. Go to trial on 10 charges, get acquitted of 9, you can get sentenced for all 10. Imagine having that conversation
with a client. I don't understand. How does that work?
Quite literally, because in the federal system, the standard of proof is different for conviction at trial and sentencing. They allow federal prosecutors to come in and say, I know the jury found him not guilty, sentence him anyway. I kid you not. Hard to imagine, true.
We're talking with David Feige, who's the author of Indefensible, One Lawyer's Journey into the Inferno of American Justice, about this 97% figure of federal cases prosecuted to conclusion by the Justice Department never make it to trial. Guilty pleas were the resolution. Any sort of final thought here as people sort of take this into their day and go, maybe we don't have a justice system here?
Well, I think we don't have a justice system. And of course, the yearning for I think all of us is to say, let's put a stop to it, to go in every day to your clients and say, you know what, let's all go to trial. Let's shut the system down. Let's finally get some procedural justice. But it'll never happen.
Trial by jury. It is a right in the Constitution, but in actual practice, maybe not so often as we might think. David Feige, author of Indefensible, One Lawyer's Journey into the Inferno of American Justice. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, John. Thanks.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.